Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual. And Jim, the good martini actually applies to everyone. The economy, according to the Department of Labor, adding 321,000 jobs last month, considerably more than the 243,000 added in October, or the 224,000 average over the past 12 months. Overall unemployment rate remained at 5.8%. Which would make you think that the labor participation rate went up and more people are getting back in. No, unfortunately, that's still down at a pretty historic low level of 62.8%. I guess we'll still find out what kind of jobs these are. I know a lot of these in recent months have been part-time jobs and so forth, but still 321,000 jobs is a much healthier number than we've seen, and hopefully we can get it going and find out they are really good quality, high-paying jobs.
We can find a couple things we will quibble with, but the sheer number of jobs created is an indisputable good news. Really no two ways about it. You know, you and I usually have wondered if the 200,000 or so jobs created a month was the new, if bad was the new normal, was mediocre the new good? And the short answer is that no, we are capable of creating more than 300,000. So it is obviously it's only 1 month. We'd like to see a lot more of it. Wage gains are not terrific. Now, some people have noted that Wall Street described the job gains as temps, Walmart greeters, nurses, and waiters. Some of them are, you know, those are, you know, not great ones. As somebody said, I'm not disparaging anybody's job. Work is work and it's all noble, but these are not exactly high paying jobs. But hey, after having lousy economic news for the most part for the past 6 years, it's nice to see one that looks, that is indisputably good, even if in past eras we would have said this was just pretty good.
Seasonally adjusted is sometimes the term that they use for this. So if you think it's just Christmas retail hires, that I think is factored in. So it's not artificially high in that regard, I'm pretty sure. So, all right, on to the bad martini now. But this has obviously got a good aftertaste to it. And that's that the George Washington Bridge probe by the legislative panel in New Jersey has found no evidence that Chris Christie ordered or even knew about the lane closure on the George Washington Bridge. Most of the blame still put on the former Port Authority executive David Wildstein and Christie's former deputy chief of staff Bridget Ann Kelly. But of course, even as they find no evidence, which in most legal settings means that's the end of the story, there's still the unanswered question. So therefore, Jim, the probe goes on well into 2015, which of course is just the time that Chris Christie will be probably launching a presidential campaign.
Here's the thing about this announcement. On the one hand, it's not surprising. I mean, we kind of had figured that, look, Christie came out and gave a very forceful insistence that he had no idea any of this was going on. If he had known, he would have put a stop to it. Then everybody observed that if he was lying at that point, not only are any of his hopes of being president one day going up in flames, that he probably would be impeached and that there'd probably be a bipartisan drive for that. Because it's one thing to have something terrible go on about it, and you know, people say the cover-up is worse than the crime. If you can go and look everybody in the eye and tell them something that's exact opposite of what's true, you're not a good leader. Well, here we go. It's been, you know, this seems like old news, and you know, obviously this was the dominant story on MSNBC for a good 2 months. And you know, if you're under investigation, the longer it takes, that's kind of a better sign for you that they're not finding stuff that would seem to be putting you in trouble. So here we are. Now, more than a year later, right? This is breaking in the fall of 2013. It is now December, and the New Jersey State Legislature, you know, a bipartisan panel with legal advice from the guy who put Rod Blagojevich behind bars and successfully prosecuted him on corruption, put it all together and has concluded that they can find no evidence that Christie had a hand in this. Now, they really rip him and his staff, and I think it's fair to say this does not necessarily all reflect well on Christie and the idea that his staffers were doing something so reckless and really malicious. Having said that, most of that coverage on MSNBC for 2 months all just assumed that he had had some hand in this, or that he had tacitly approved it or overtly approved it or something like that, and they never found it. And that is a deeply troubling set of circumstances when the media just trashes a guy for month after month, and then it turns out, oh, wait, he really had nothing to do with it. I don't know where Chris Christie goes to get his reputation back. He, you know, has really been done a disservice, and I think it's a earlier in the week, I talked about the concept of narrative journalism versus factual journalism. You know, you decide what the story is, and then you look for the facts instead of the other way around. And I think this is a it has claimed another scalp here, and that Chris Christie deserves, you know, blame for putting these people in office or in their positions of responsibility, but he does not deserve blame for their actions, which were their decisions.
There was wall-to-wall, really, for days, weeks, and maybe even months from MSNBC when the allegations came out. How much wall-to-wall coverage do you think this report will get over there?
I'm sure they're probably doing more continuing coverage of Elizabeth Lawton. So they won't have time for all that stuff. You know, there's probably some other that, or maybe a 12-part investigative series on George W. Bush and the plastic turkey.
Priorities. All right, on to the crazy martini now. One of the most venerable publications in Washington for decades and even a century, really, has been the New Republic. It's certainly not branded as a conservative magazine, but it's not necessarily knee-jerk liberal. It probably leans a little bit to the left and has over the years, but they've certainly taken some positions, including supporting the Iraq War in 2003, being critical of the Clinton health care reform plan in 1993 and so forth. So they're not just dyed-in-the-wool liberals, certainly over there. Well, they've recently been bought by the co-founder of Facebook, Chris Hughes, who's in his early 30s, and he has basically decided to get rid of some of the most well-known people, including the literary editor, one of the leading editors, Franklin Foer, on the news side, who's had a great reputation in Washington over the years. And so, Jim, the bizarre part about this is, number one, a lot of these folks found out through social media rather than being told first in person by the new owner of the New Republic. And secondly, as you point out, the fun part is here, he really wants to get away from long-form journalism because he doesn't like long articles.
Yeah, that's, you know, an unnerving thing for a writer to hear. And let me just, the New Republic, is, I think you characterized it well. It's generally left of center. It's generally not hard left, you could say. I think probably folks on the right, probably like one out of every three articles will say something interesting to us. And the other two will be like, what the hell are they smoking over there? And, you know, it was relatively neoconservative or pro-war on terror, you know, right after 9/11. And then as the Iraq War dragged on, it went further to the left. And I think it's safe to say that it's been for much of the, I'm going to say from ever since Peter Beinart left, a more predictably liberal magazine. But kind of separate from all that, so they've given this new owner who's got $1 billion from Facebook, and who, you know, presumably was saying all the right things when he took over, that he respected the tradition of the place, he understood its place in journalistic history, that this was a place for intellectual debate and all that stuff. Well, the new guy in charge says, I don't really like to think of ourselves as a magazine. I like to think of ourselves as a vertically integrated media institution, which to me suggested that instead of printing from left to right, they're going to print from up to down. A lot was like, what does that mean? By the way, some of these things, you know, I feel very confident, and everything's, as far as I know, everything's cool down here at National Review, although we are having our annual fundraising effort. So if you feel like kicking in a few bucks, thank you. But it's, you know, every print publication faces the pressure of how you're going to keep the lights on, particularly if you're an opinion magazine and particularly if you're a political opinion magazine. And the new guys have just basically kind of sounds like they want to make it BuzzFeed. They want to make it shorter, you know, articles. And they brought in one guy from Salon, a much more predictably liberal and I think sometimes ridiculous publication, and another guy from some other ominous place. So basically, this was all going to become increasingly predictably liberal, snarky, short-term, a Twitter feed, you know. Just as we've been having this conversation, Greg, I've just received word. I won't list all of the people who have submitted their resignations in response to these new changes. I think it's like 20, 25 people.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's basically the entire masthead has just resigned. And, you know, fairly big names and folks that we may know from our world. You know, Ryan Lizza is a guy I've always thought of as a pretty solid reporter. Robert Kagan, a pretty serious foreign policy, national security reporter. Ann Applebaum. Folks who are in the periphery of the conservative journalism and policy wonk world. And so it'll be interesting to see who's left, whether it's just the Salon guy and Brian Buettler or something like that. So not, you know, you're watching an institution implode before our eyes, and it's a crazy turn of events. Because why would you buy an institution like the New Republic if you wanted to turn it into BuzzFeed? It's just kind of baffling. It really doesn't, as you mentioned earlier, it doesn't speak well. If you got to let somebody go, let them know. Make sure they hear it from you. don't let them read in other media that they've been let go. And then they call and say, hey, this report says I've been replaced. Is it true? Because that's a really uncomfortable conversation to have. And finally, this chief executive who apparently doesn't like to read. So why are you in charge of a magazine? It looks like a lot more cat gifts are coming to the New Republic. And that's a very drastic change in the DC journalism world. And even if we ideologically disagree with these guys, it's never fun to see people losing their jobs. And I think if you like serious journalism and long form journalism and reporting and all that kind of stuff, this is not a good turn of events. And we'll see how this goes from here on out. So to preview a post that'll go on Campaign Spot in a bit, when all those New Republic people, Greg, feel like they're watching a beloved institution with an unparalleled history and place in their lives get taken over by a bunch of irresponsible, arrogant, dishonest radicals who have more money than good sense. They don't appreciate the institution's tradition, greatness, or place in history, disregard all criticism and all the warning signs that are running the place into the ground. Greg, can you think of anything else, any other republic who may have had that kind of influence lately? Sound familiar? Some hotshot comes in, convinced he knows everything, and everything goes down the tubes. Is that ringing any bell?
Yeah, we live there.
So we feel you, New Republic fans. We feel you,
Very good. Jim, on that note, we'll say good weekend to everyone, and we'll reconvene on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Carumbas of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and be sure to join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.